You're listening to the Medical School Podcast, a show that inspires medical students, pre-meds, and even residents to maximize their medical education. My name is Danny Sullivan, and I'm sitting down with doctors and future doctors who share their story and advice. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to part three of this three-part series on the Medical School Podcast, where I have a very special guest, Doc Osara. Doc Osara, thank you so much for being on the podcast again.
Thanks for having me, Danny. Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, I hate to have you do this a third time because we had you do this in part one and two, but maybe for those who didn't watch part one and two, can you just kind of briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
No problem. So my name is Doc Osara. I'm currently a neurology resident in Southern California, and I run what's called the Doc Osara YouTube channel, where we're YouTube's original YouTube channel for pre-med and medical students.
Awesome. And you've recently written a book called A to Z of Medical School, which we've talked about in the previous episodes. And we're going to kind of get a little bit more into that later on in this episode. And then something unique about you, I guess, that I know from your YouTube videos is that in addition to your MD degree, you also got your master's in business administration.
That's correct. I did the dual degree MD-MBA. And I got to say, looking back at it, it was a amazing and ingenious thing to do. So if you guys are thinking about it in the podcast, like, lean towards doing it. There's so many benefits.
That's good to hear. So in this episode, we're going to get more in depth in that, your experience doing that. And then also kind of talk about those last 2 years of medical school where you're doing your clinical rotations, how to succeed during those years. And then also we're going to talk about the transition from medical school to residency, you know, the process of kind of applying for residency and all of that. So if you haven't listened to part one was really kind of meant for high schoolers or pre-meds. Part two was meant for people who were in their first 2 years of medical school. And so this part three is meant for people in their last 2 years of medical school or starting residency. So we're just going to jump right into it. The kind of the first question or prompt I had for you is, when did you start or when did you become interested in getting that master's in business administration?
So I didn't even really know an MBA degree existed, probably towards the beginning of my college. Beginning of medical school, I was behind the curve is what I'm trying to say. When I was in college, I was just so focused on like being pre-med, studying bio. I never touched accounting. I never touched finance. Never really understood personal finance or personal like money management. Big mistakes that I wish I could go back and learn more in college, but you know, you can learn them now. And really until I was in medical school and I heard that my medical school had this joint MD-MBA degree, did I really even think, well, what is an MBA and, you know, what could I do with it? So I started thinking about it during the first year of med school because, you know, you're there and they talk about all these things they offer. You know, my school is very big on ultrasound curriculum. And then I got to learn that, oh, okay, an MBA degree is a thing that some people do. You know, I was very familiar with the MD-PhD or the MD-MS in something. But MBA was kind of this new thing that, you know, was becoming more popular as time was going on. And for someone like me, who was the first physician in a family where everyone was a businessman or woman, I kind of was appealed to it because then I kind of had this nice balance of doing what I wanted in medicine, but then also kind of, you know, tapping into my entrepreneurial roots.
Well, there's kind of a stigma that I've heard, at least, that so many doctors are, you know, terrible with money, even though a lot of them make a lot of it, right? And, you know, maybe not so good in business. So, I mean, getting that MBA is, I think, going to be, it can only be beneficial, right? So,
yeah, I mean, the MBA is weird. I don't think the MBA is as logical as medical school. When you go to medical school, you learn things that are useful that you actually use in life. You know, like in the beginning years, you're learning basic science. You learn how the kidney works in the hospital. You learn how to like take care of people. And then you become a doctor and a resident and you use that stuff. But MBA is weird. The things you learn, you don't usually use in real life. I mean, maybe some parts of it you do. What I actually think the value in MBA is not so much the classroom curriculum, but instead like the frame of mind, the thinking, the ideas, the network of people you meet, all the things really essentially outside the MBA to me is where the value is. anyone can take a course online in anything these days. But like the MBA environment and mindset, like once I went to business school and got out, I was a very different person. And I would only say for the better. I'd be like, I feel like I untapped my mind where med school was keeping me so locked in.
Did
And I
you?
think, yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So I was going to end it by saying, I think a lot of, I mean, you were absolutely right when you say physicians are not good with money. And it's not because physicians are not smart. It's that to be good at money just means you simply had to be trained in it. And the training is outrageously simple. It's not like medicine is complex sometimes. Money is not. You can make money complex, but like the fundamental things that'll make you like accumulate wealth and not lose all your, you know, money for all your hard work in medicine are very simple to learn. And people are very willing out there to steal your money because you don't have that basic knowledge base. And so doctors are really at a disadvantage because we spent all of our time in med school. I mean, I didn't know what an MBA was until I was like 21. And you know, like, that's kind of weird. But I mean, imagine if I had just kept in that same mindset, I would be like 30 and still not understanding Roth IRA or mutual funds. And that would be a big problem. So I think, you know, the MBA teaching is so vital to having a different way of just simply thinking, not even just the knowledge base. Anyone can learn. Thinking is a new way to learn.
Do you feel like getting the MBA gave you an advantage when you were applying to residencies? Did it come up at all in your interviews or anything like that?
Yeah, it comes up in every interview because people don't like it initially because they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. MBA is like the guy who calls me and tries to take my money. I don't know what's going on here. And that's true. I really sometimes don't trust people in business. And that's fine because you should have your guard up in business. Like if you don't and you trust everyone, you're going to get taken. People are bad, whatever. Like have your guard up with everything you do. So I think in the residency interviews, they were probably much more used to seeing the MD PhDs or the MDMS. You know, MD PhD used to be called like the triple threat. You could see patients with your MD, you could do research with your PhD, and you could also be academic and teach. That was considered like the triple threat when I was at starting med school. Towards the end, it became just explosively popular. While I was in business school, MD MBA was just like MD MBA became the new MD PhD to some degree. So when I was interviewing, there was some familiarity with programs with a degree, so I didn't have to take that, you know, first mover hit that all the other people before me took. But still, there was lots of skepticism regarding what are you going to do with this MBA? And for some reason, everyone kept thinking, oh, you're going to go into healthcare administration? Like, what else would you like? Like, because doctors are so fixated on their whole minds being the hospital is all that could exist in life. They couldn't see the MBA outside of healthcare still. Just because you are a physician with an MBA does not mean you have to go into healthcare administration or like hospital like leadership. You could do anything in life, just like with your MD. So for me, when I was in residency interview, you know, like I did like the idea of possibly doing healthcare administration. I mean, I wasn't sure about it, but what I tried to really emphasize was it's not simply you gain training to go do another job. Like you become a neurologist or neurology residency and you see neurology patients, but getting an MBA with your MD does not mean you go and sit in a healthcare office now. But instead means you have a different way of thinking. And I think when you pitch to people that a way of thinking comes out of training is much more meaningful and they can also understand than trying to pitch, in my opinion, a very boring and lame line about healthcare administration and changing policy, where the mass majority of people don't have the knowledge base to do that.
So, how long did it take you outside of medical school? Was it a year program, 2 year program?
So it's like a year and a half. MBA traditionally is 2 years. That half that I didn't have was during the summer. You would spend your summer between the first and second year of MBA. Doing like an internship for someone. So traditionally, you'd go in, then you do an internship at a company, and hopefully that company would offer you a full-time offer from the MBA, and you would finish your MBA, then you would go and work at this whole hopefully new higher level company. But for us in the MD MBA, we do our first year of MBA during that summer when everyone was doing internships. We like did rotations for medical school, and then when you know we came back, we finished off that other year. So we don't get that summer internship because we already have jobs. We'll be residents. But the benefit of that is you get the full MBA training essentially in a year. So it's a 5-year MD MBA program. What you lose though is you don't get a summer internship in MBA, But what you do lose on the MD side, which people should be very aware of, is what I call the fourth year relaxing waste of time. So in traditional medical school, during your fourth year, like after the beginning few months, you're doing like nothing useful with your time. You're like taking electives that are fun, doing what you want, like elective wise, maybe taking some research, but essentially all the major requirements are done at that time, and you're just waiting to hear back from Match and doing residency interviews. So all that extra like elective time of fun things you could take, or take quote unquote research or vacations, those they take those away from you, and instead it's make you take healthcare MBA courses to cover those. So it makes med school more rigorous, honestly. Like you have less mess around time, but in my opinion, it's worth it to get the
So
MBA.
for students who might be interested in doing that same thing, what advice would you give as far as preparing for business school?
Business school, you really can't. I feel like people who are physicians or becoming physicians through medical school, you're so set in a certain way of life. Like getting you ready for business school is not possible. I can get anyone ready for medical school. I mean, the book I wrote talks about that. Like I can, a 30-minute phone call, like I can get someone chimed in. But going into business school, my only advice would be like have the most open mind you can going in. Like just acknowledge you know nothing. Like just be willing to say, I don't know what's going on. I'm not a business person. And more so, you don't have to prove anything to anyone, man. You're a physician. Like relax. Like your life is great. Like you already, like people are gonna like love you either way, and you hopefully love yourself. Like just go into business school, like take it as an open opportunity. Say, you know what? I'm just here to get what I can out of it and enjoy the experience, and the rest will naturally come.
So I want to talk about basically the transition from like your first 2 years where you're doing a lot of book work, right? And learning the basic sciences, you've taken step one, and then transitioning to the, I guess the second 2 years doing the clinical rotations. First of all, like, what was your feeling like after you had taken step one? I mean, was that just a huge burden lifted off your shoulders?
I wish. I remember me and my good friend, he's now an ophthalmologist in Philly. We both took step one on the same day in the same center. And then like we both kind of finished around the same time. Like we knew we were gonna hang out. And afterwards, like we went to go get food. I could barely eat. He was nauseated. We called our other friends. They were like racing around the room talking about what they thought there was on the exam. Like right after the exam is It was not fun for anyone because we're all like, did we do okay? What happened? That was such an important exam. My whole life is over. Oh my God. Like you don't know. But like once like a couple days go by in a week or so, and then like your whole mind starts to become, oh my God, now I have to like get ready for rotations. Like this is another big paradigm in my life. Then you start to be like, okay, thank God that's over. Now I can just because you had spent so much time thinking about step one. Now it's like just fun to be like, oh God, thank God that component of my life is over. Now I can focus on like how to survive the wards. So really it's like one survival mode to another, but at least it's fun.
When I was in pre-med and like we would have, they'd get medical students to come speak to us. It seemed like they always made sure that they got the medical student to come speak like after they had taken step one and like gotten their score back, because they came and they were like telling us, oh yeah, medical school is awesome, but then they would tell us, but if you talked to me 2 months ago, I would have told you, no way, don't go to, don't even, it's not worth it. So
Oh, absolutely. I mean, step one is a like you feel like a real med student arguably after step one. You're like, okay, I've made it to this big step, entering the wards, putting on the short white coat, seeing patients every day. That's when it starts to feel real.
So, what advice would you give for people who are in their clinical rotations, in the wards? And that's kind of a broad question, but do you have anything kind of off the top of your head?
Clinical rotations are so important. I mean, people get fixated on getting a good step one score. And yeah, get the best score you can. There's no, I mean, even in my book, I map out like three entire chapters to step one, like how to study for it, how to pick your resources, how to even like do hour by hour timing of your day when you're studying. I even break down what foods to eat that I think are ideal for a step. We go into crazy detail. And that's how I do it for step one because it's that important, sure. But then getting into the wards, I'm going to argue, is even as important as step one. It's not like, oh, I have a good step one score, I can be whatever. No, you have to kill it in your rotations. And here's the reason why. No one, I mean, if you have a good step one score, good for you, but no one still cares, because what we care about are what are your letters of recommendation say for residency? And really, who's, and this is like the secret to residency, a lot of people don't know until you kind of get into it, who is picking up the phone for you in residency application? What that means is when you're applying to medical school, it's as generic and paper oriented as can be. It's like college. You submit an application, you interview, you apply. There's no strings attached. Like, it's really hard to corrupt this system. But residency, it's open game. And that's the beauty of it. Residency is a very small network, and each specialty is an even smaller network. So when you're a third year student, you're rotating on the wards, you want to one, like, learn how to be a good, clinician on the wards, because that's your life. Like, that's why it's really important. But second, you want to make sure like you have common sense and that you do well. You're a team player. You're not just a student there to use them. You're there to learn, but also contribute to the team. I mean, you're there in the hospital with physicians who this is their full-time job, with residents that are there in residency. Like, they all have work, and they don't get to go home unless the work's done, and the work surrounds patients' lives, so it's extremely serious. For a med student, it's kind of like, well, I'm here to learn and get a rotation grade. Well, not really. If you look at it like that, you're going to have a really tough time on the wards. But if you look at it instead about, well, people here are working, and so am I now. I'm here to work and help the team operate, the business unit. But in that process, I'm going to learn myself. And if you have that mindset, you'll already make natural moves to, instead of trying to leave early and go home and study, you'll stay late, help the resident, and that resident will make a comment to the attending about how you're dedicated. You'll instead like try to help with putting in orders or writing notes, not just laying around and like sitting in the corner reading like a question bank book for step two. That makes a really big difference. And when you're a team player, it shows, oh, this person gets it. They're ready for residency. This is a job. Like, school is over. That was the first 2 years. Now we are working. And in third year, you're just like a resident. You work during the day and you study on your own time. You don't get to study at the hospital. There's work that needs to be done.
At the kind of at the end of those 2 years is when you take your step two, your second board exam in medical school, right? So what did you do differently, if anything, to prepare for step two that you didn't do in step one? Or you know what I mean?
I mean, you learn a lot from step one. When it comes to step two gets a lot easier. For step one, I was using multiple resources. It was this drawn out process. Very, you're learning the process of USMLE. Step two, it gets a lot easier. Step
Is
two, you
it
don't have time to mess.
easier in that the fact that the questions are easier, or just that you've
Oh no, it's just as hard. But it's easier because you're used to the game by now. Going through one step, you learn the system, and it narrows down your effort for step two. Step two, what you're going to be, I mean, the harder part is you're working and studying, not only for the shelves for each rotation, but also always for step two. So then when it comes to step two studying, you realize I don't have all day to be like sitting in lecture like I did for step one. So you pick a question bank. Most people just pick UWorld, and they have some book they read along with it, like some kind of, fully embracing book like Step Up or First Aid or the Kaplan series, whatever. And they just pick a Q bank and they pick that book and it's all they do and they go Q bank mania. And by step two time, you're a pro at using Q banks. It's second nature. And that's all you can do realistically. In the process of studying for each shelf, you can get more, focused on minutiae and like listen to a lecture series or like watch videos. But for dedicated step two time, it's pure Q bank in a book because that's all the time you get.
So you're right now you're in a neurology residency, or you're in your second year, right?
I have 2 weeks left to second year,
Oh, okay.
and then in July I become a majestic third
Oh,
year.
nice.
You become TGY3.
So when you were applying for residency, did you, or I guess, yeah, when you were applying for residency, did you like 100% know, were you set on neurology, or were you really debating between, multiple specialties?
I was lucky in that I knew I was going to do neuro, so I just had it pretty simple.
What?
I feel like most people in general know what they're applying to. It's really the minority that are in this wishy-washy state.
Right. What kind of drew you to nor to neurology?
Luck. So for me, like when I started medical school, I was all like gung-ho and excited about surgery. I was doing like transplant surgery research. I was just like super excited. But then, like, when third year came around, I was like, wow, I just spent 2 years doing research. I had pubbed out. I was friends with, like, the transplant team. And then third year comes, and, like, I'm in the OR, and I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. It's like the environment didn't make me happy. The residents were not like me. People didn't have, like, my hypomanic crazy attitude. Like, people didn't just giggle and have fun and, like, jump around. I didn't want to stand the OR. Like, I didn't fit in. I think that's the most important thing when it comes to picking a specialty. And I learned that very early on. I was like 17. I was in Stanford doing research. That's how you know I'm a nerd. And the ENT attending at the time was like having a sandwich with me because I was working in his lab. And he's like, let me just keep, I don't know how I memorized this one thing out of that whole, like, experience. He's like, when it comes to picking a specialty, pick a place where you fit in. If you don't, if you're not like the other people, you probably don't shouldn't be going there. And then when I was
Does that go
picking
as, oh,
residency, it's
sorry, go ahead.
true. No, I'm just saying it's true. He's right.
Does that go the same for applying to a residency program? Like, if you know, obviously there's more prestigious residencies and there's less prestigious residencies. Like, if someone really feels at home at a less prestigious one, but do you feel like they should take that one or just go wherever fits or try to go for the best one they can?
Yeah, no,
It's.
I disagree with the concept of go with the best one you can, because what is best? Like, this is my opinion, and this is, like, outrageously biased on my part, because the way I view your academic pedigree is based on happiness, nothing else. So if you want to be academic, then okay, pedigree is important to you. Too bad if you don't like that. Like, that's how academics are. But if you're not an academic, then the whole world's open to you. You can do whatever you want in life. You can go to any program, get whatever training you want, have fun, do what's important. So pick what you want. But if you imagine, even if you're going into private practice, like most physicians will, the only thing that matters to you is what do you want out of your training? You can, if it's important to you, and I know some people who are like, I want to go to a certain program for the pedigree name, then go, because that's important to you. But if you're like, I don't care, this one program's close to my house and it's easy for me to live and the training's, like, pretty good, like, but it doesn't have the biggest name. And if that's what you want, do it. Like, at the end of the day, this is what separates you once you are picking residency. When you're, like, in the pre-med, med school times, yeah, where you go matters because there's so many steps left. But once you're picking residency, the only step left is fellowship, if you want it. And if you, even if you want to go for fellowship, it's an even smaller community. So again, if you want to, for some reason early on, know you're going to go super academic pedigree fellowships, then again, yeah, you might have to pick this train of better pedigree. But if you're like, man, like, I'll probably take any fellowship, or I might not even do fellowship, then you have no one bothering you anymore, and you're free to do whatever you want. So go and do whatever program you want. Don't listen to anyone else. There's, unless you want it, don't do it.
That makes sense. So at the you've gotten accepted to residency. I want to talk about the transition from medical school to residency. Like, what was that transition like? And I have to ask this question too. What was more difficult for you? Was it the first year of medical school or the first year of residency?
I'm going to say first year of med school was a lot harder. Residency is, like, easy because you get it. When you transition from pre-med to medical school, like, that's such a paradigm shift. It's such a different world. And it's so intimidating. But when you transition from, like, fourth year medical student to intern, you already knew what interns were doing when you were a fourth year medical student. And if anything, when you were doing your sub internships or sub eyes, you were already practicing. So once you get into intern year, it's like, well, I saw this coming, and I was kind of excited for it. So getting into intern year is, like, a relief, because in my mind, I was really happy to be a resident because I was finally, like, a little bit in charge and got to do what I wanted. As a med student, you were only told what to do. But as a resident, like, the attendings look to you to run the team because that's your training. And then they give you feedback. So I really like, having a bit of control, having a bit of opportunity to do things and learn. So getting into residency was just such a relief and fun for me.
So you've fairly recently written a book called A to Z of Medical School. What things are in there that would be applicable or helpful for people who are going through their last 2 years of medical school or like residency?
So what we talk about there is how to be a good medical student because it's so outrageously important in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who on their evaluations gets written, this student functions at the level of an intern, which is like the gold statement you want to get as a third or fourth year. That person is very different than the person who I write, oh, this person worked hard and knew what they were talking. Like that's a pretty lame thing to hear. But if you can write, this person functions at the level of an intern, residency programs open their eyes and pay attention now. And the difference there is this person part of the team and willing to do whatever it takes to work like a resident, or are they a med student who's focused on their own learning? And I'll give you an example of like, so I was in the ICU a couple months ago, and I had like these group of 30 year students. We always have med students, but like this group kind of stood out because there was a group, and one kid I wrote on his evaluation, this kid functions at the level of an intern. Any residency program will be blessed to have him. And for the other kid, I wrote, good student, hardworking. Period. Like that's my way of being like, what the get this kid out of here. He's annoying the crap out of me. And the difference between those kids was the person who I wrote such a shining review for, he would get there early every morning at my time. Other med students would show up later. I'm like, are you kidding me? You don't show up later than a resident. You show up before. Like that's how hierarchy works. He would get there early, he would print the list for everyone. And he would start like looking at his own patients. Like he was already self-driven. While the other kid would have the audacity, and I still think this is crazy, to come after the, us coming in and stroll in casually, get there for rounds, take one of the printed sign-outs that the other medical student printed, and then come ask me, who do you want me to see today? Oh, who do I need to see? Who's new? But the other kid, I knew what he did. He remote logged in from home, looked at the list, recognized the new names, kind of read about them, and then he would stroll in the morning, print out the list, and say, "Hey, I saw this one girl's new. Can I take her?" Do you see the difference? Like that's not, I mean, the thing is like to do that to some degree, hopefully an upperclassman tells you that advice when you're in med school and you can do it. But alternatively, common sense being common, like this is still business. Like come in early, do your work, your lower level of training, you're gonna need more time. And more so, don't bother your boss. Like the resident is responsible for teaching the medical student and kind of taking care of you. Don't add more work to the resident's life, and then you'll do shining. So if I have to tell you who's new, give you a person, tell you what to do, like now I'm angry. But if you kind of do it yourself, it's perfect. Or say, for example, we have to do it. We do this like every other hour. Like there's just something to do. I need you to call down to the lab and find out what happened to the LP sample because we need to send it for tuberculosis. The student that says, okay, I'll figure it out, shining star. The kid who says, so who do I call? What's the number for lab? Where? I don't care. Figure it out because that's what I'm going to do. You see the difference? So again, be independent. Be self-driven, try to take over the job of the resident. If you can do their job for them, now you're a valuable asset. If you're bugging us and you're a liability, we're going to notice it. That's the big mindset difference. If you think that way, all your actions below will be self like obvious. It's better than me telling you do these little things. I think it's better if I give you the big picture and you'll naturally do all the right small things.
Can you just mention for our listeners where they can find your book?
Absolutely. So it's on Amazon. If you just type in A to Z of medical school or just type in my name, Doc Osara, it should pop right up. It's available on Kindle for the ebook if you want to read it on the go and swipe down to have Kindle read it for you. And it's also available in paperback for all the people who like to highlight and still use a pencil and underline.
All right, awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this three-part series of this podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Danny.